How did you get involved in the Environmental Conservation Committee?
Well, I was asked back in the day, remember that Environmental Conservation, the old Conservation Department, was mostly fish and wildlife and land management, and then there was solid waste management. What existed was under the Health Department, and there was a Pure Waters Program. The environmental conservation movement began in New York State in 1970 with something called Earth Day. And that's when the Department of Environmental Conservation was created. I had to be an intern then, and I was literally there when Governor Rockefeller signed into law the creation of the Department of Environmental Conservation. So I've always had an interest in keeping our environment safe, but also in providing natural resources for people, hunting, fishing, hiking, those types of activities. And then when I got to the legislature, I was asked to serve on the Environmental Conservation Committee, which I did. And it was the ranking member of that committee, ranking Republican, and worked very closely with the then chairman on several issues, one of which was to create a solid waste program for New York State. Up until the early 80s, every community, every town, every village was responsible for its own solid waste disposal. Some places it was done privately, some publicly. A lot of communities had what in those cases were called the town dump. There weren't landfills as we know them now. And it became very apparent that this had to be corrected. First, you just can't bury everything. You don't put toxic waste in the ground, for example. You don't put household cleaners and solvents, just in paints. That's what we were doing in those days. The other way of getting it was to burn it, and everybody knows that's bad for the environment as well. So there had to be a comprehensive approach, and the government, the legislature created something called the Legislative Commission on Solid Waste Management, a bipartisan two-house commission that I served on, to put together the long-range planning, and we did. We came up with the Omnibus Solid Waste Act in the mid-1980s, which created what is now in law today, where we allow for regional approach or county-wide approach to solid waste, and we allow for both public and private enterprises to collect and dispose of household waste, to dispose of toxic waste, to dispose of construction debris, all those things as we have now. If you look around now, we have in this county, for example, the transfer stations, then the landfill. So there's not a town landfill to which products, garbage or trash is taken. So we were very involved in that, but we also were involved in what we called the hierarchy of solid waste, where you start with the notion of reuse and then recycling, and then you get into reduce, reuse, recycle, and then the rest of it has to be disposed in a proper fashion. So we were very involved in that back in the 80s, and it was a great experience, and I think we accomplished something.
What are your thoughts on the current environmental issues?
Well, I think we continue to we have to be continually vigilant when it comes to protecting our water and our air. But I think we go overboard sometime with over-regulation. We're never going to have 100% perfect anything in this world. Nothing is perfect. And there are always going to be people who will shirk their responsibilities toward the environment. And that's where government comes in, where you have to set the framework, develop the rules, enforce the rules, and penalize those who break the rules. At the same time, you can't put all the, for example, we put most of the owner, the burden onto the backs of businesses, for example. And we stymie, I think, some economic growth in the name of the environment, but it's not really environmentally sound what we're doing, or it's not effective. So I think like everything else in life, I believe in two things in life, a balance and moderation. Whether it be your personal diet or whether it be your lifestyle, anything in moderation is fine as far as I'm concerned. It's when you go to excesses. And just like you can't have excessive abuse, you can't have excessive regulation either. So we need to find a balance there. I think we live in a very safe environment here, a very clean environment. I know the local community here spends a lot of time working on things like the quality of water. I have a lot of respect for what they do at the biological field station here in Cooperstown. and what people do here on Otsego Lake to keep it clean, to keep it safe, and to preserve it for future generations. So I believe in all of that, and I support that. But it's got to be done within the proper framework.
How have you seen the nature of the political parties change over your career?
Well, first of all, New York State is one of those states that allows something called fusion voting, where you can have multiple lines and add them together. We're only about three or four states that do that. So we have a proliferation of political parties. Years ago, we had the Republican Party, obviously, and the Democrat Party. And then there was the Conservative Party formed. Really, it was a wing of the Republican Party formed as a party. And we had a Liberal Party. So between the two parties and the two philosophies, there were four parties in New York State, and there would be spinoffs here and there. Over the years, there was a Socialist Worker Party. There was even a Communist Party one time in New York. Today, we to get on the ballot and to be a political party, you must have a candidate on that line for governor garner at least 50,000 votes, which isn't a lot of votes. And right now, we have the Republican Party, the Democrat Party, Conservative Party, Working Families Party, Independence Party, Reform Party, the Green Party. So we have a proliferation of political parties, which makes it a little bit confusing for the voter. But the other big... So it's just there are more parties, I think, than we really actually need. But that seems, and then everybody has the right to form their own independent party if they want and create your own label. That used to be true mostly in local governments, but now statewide too. But the central political parties are not as strong as they once were. It was many, many years ago, it was the central political party that was responsible for nominating the candidates, marshaling the resources, and then helping to support candidates, and then getting out the vote. Today, individual candidates, almost all of them, I mean, every member of the state legislature, every member of Congress has their own fundraising mechanism, their own committee, if you will, and then from there, they spend an inordinate amount of time raising money and spending money. So the political parties, but political parties can provide an infrastructure. The state law, for example, it's only a political party can nominate you for office, unless you want to go the independent route, which is much more complicated. There are certain expenditures that must run through a political party, certain benefits. A lot of the data we talk about in the social media and using micro-targeting and other types of data, most of that is done through central parties, although there's individual vendors now providing it, and the candidate with the resource can buy their own. But political parties, I think, are important to provide the infrastructure and the framework for campaigning, but they're not as strong as they were 50 years ago, 100 years, 60 years ago.
How do you feel about the two-party system? Strictly the Republican and Democrat parties having the majority.
Well, that's been that way for a long time. I don't quite understand what the question is. I believe in a two-party system. Well, I believe in the party structure. So, but we have more than a two-party system. We have like a four. You're talking about the national level.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, again, I think that provides the framework, and that provides the mechanical structure for getting people nominated. The major role of a party is at each end of the spectrum, getting them nominated and getting the vote out. In between, it's the candidate's responsibility to sell himself or herself to the voters, to get a message out, to convince people to vote for that candidate. Then it's up to the parties to get the people to the polls. So I believe in the two-party system, yeah.
What are your thoughts on the most recent presidential campaigns?
It was the most interesting election cycle I've ever experienced. And I am a Republican, and I do support the Republican nominee, and I support the Republican president. But I will tell you, when Donald Trump first came down that escalator in that famous announcement, every political pundit, every longtime poll was just shaking their head saying, this experiment's not going to work. I mean, this guy's not going anyplace. He's so non-traditional. and yet the most non-traditional person won. He beat out 10 or 11, maybe 12 candidates, other candidates, for the nomination, and he beat the person who was never supposed to lose in November. So I respect the results of any election, and I wish everybody would. And getting back to our earlier discussion about the change in politics, I don't think that the first word out of people's minds when you lose an election is impeach the guy. But either side, I wish it would all go away. The lock her up stuff I did not really agree with. The impeach him stuff, I don't go with that either. I think we should just allow our government to function. And when it stops functioning, then you elect somebody else.
Do you have any concerns about the next 3 years under the current leadership?
My concern is that Congress and the president have to work together to get something done. I know they're trying to work, as we speak today, on a tax bill. I don't think they've gotten their act together yet, but I think part of it is the divisiveness within the country, which is then evidenced by the actions in Washington. You know, and it goes both ways. I mean, I remember when the Democrats passed the so-called Obamacare, they did without Republican votes, and now they're complaining because the Republicans are trying to pass a repeal without their votes. The days of Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan are what we need today. You know, a little bit of bipartisanship, a little bit of camaraderie is lacking sorely.
What do you think brought about this divisiveness?
I'm not sure. I don't know if it began in 2000, Bush v. Gore. I don't know if it began before that. There seems to be a lack of civility in society generally, and maybe that's part of it. I'm not really certain what one factor, but when you add up the fact that there's a constant campaigning, lack of civility, there's kind of a me first approach by a lot of people. You know, I've got mine, and people are not concerned about other people anymore. They're not looking to take care of each other like we used to do, and I think that's very troubling to me.
Can you tell me a little bit about what you're doing now in politics?
Basically, I've lived long enough to be a burden to my friends. And by that, I mean I help people. I'm not a kind of person who could retire and just sit around and read books and go fishing all day. But I'm at a point in life where I take time off when I feel like it now. I don't have to go to work if I don't want to. But I like doing what I'm doing. I like being in the community. As you know, we're sitting here in my one room office. This is international headquarters for my entire effort, I tell people. But I live in a town where I can walk to work, and I can walk to Main Street, and I can go next door to the coffee shop if I want. I have five grandchildren, three of whom do not live too close. I get in the car and go down and see a football game or a dance recital if I want. My wife and I spend a lot of time in the winter in warmer climate. But basically, so I'm an advisor. I help advise people and try to give my best advice and guidance. I like the kind of work where I don't have to physically be present. I don't have to be in an office every day. I don't have to be on the road every day. And this is where I personally really appreciate technology, because a lot of what I do today, whether it be on the private side, you know, helping people with their government issues and their problems, and we do a lot of work with administrative and regulatory agencies, helping people, their businesses, or whether it be with the political side where I advise candidates. We provide a lot of advice and guidance, but a lot of it can be done over the telephone, conference calling, video conferencing, and emailing, which is very effective. So basically, I want to offer my experience to others to assist them in their goals, whether it be running for office, governing, or running a business. So business development, government relations, public policy is the kind of stuff I'm looking at right now and involved in.
Are you working on any campaigns currently?
Don't do campaigns. I do advise the New York State Republican Party chairman and work with him on strategy and solutions for party matters. But when there's campaigns going on, as there just were in the local cycle, again, I advise people, but I don't manage campaigns. I don't run campaigns per se. That's not what I do. Basically give advice and guidance, give strategy. Strategies and solutions, I like to say.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your time in Florida?
Yeah, I was, as I said, I had about 30 years in state and federal government and politics, and got a phone call. Well, I had befriended a gentleman who started a small college in Florida and grew it, but he also had an operation in upstate New York, and he and I got to be friendly, and one thing led to another, and I had never been, I had been involved in education as a supporter, both as an alumnus of my alma mater, as a legislator helping higher education and elementary and secondary education people. But he came to me one day and said, you know, I need somebody with administrative skills. I had run a state agency, and I need someone with administrative and community relations skills to help me do some restructuring. So he invited me to go down to Florida and help him operate a small school, Lynn University, which is based in Boca Raton, Florida. It is a school that this man had taken over about 35 years before and grew it into a medium-sized university from a small two-year school to a full-blown university. And I went in and did corporate. I did the corporate structuring for him and did all the community relations stuff for about 8 years. It was a great experience. First of all, when you're dealing with young people every day, it's vibrant. You don't get old. You don't get tired. Obviously, the environment in Florida was excellent. You know, working in that environment. I remember the first day on the job. I started on the first of March, and I was in my office, and we had to go to a meeting. So I was looking for my coat, and I realized I don't need a coat. It's Florida, and I can go outside right now. Worked with a number of good people. Got to meet a lot of wonderful people from academia and from the local community. But it was a good experience, and I would do it all over again if I had the chance.
What brought you to make the decision to switch from your role in politics in Washington, D.C. and move to higher education in Florida?
I had 30 years in government, was on a government payroll, and I wanted to try the private sector, see if I could make it. And it was a chance to go into the private sector. I had three segments of my life, the government relations stuff, the government experience, government employment. But then I went into the private sector with the school, and now I'm working for myself. So I've been a public sector employee, I've been a private sector employee, and I've been self-employed. So I wanted to run the gamut during my life, and I was able to do all three. I was very fortunate. I've been very fortunate.
And what brought you to move to Cooperstown?
My wife and I were living in Florida. We wanted a presence in upstate New York. We never really left upstate. I was always back and forth. I still had business interests here in this region, and we wanted a place in upstate New York closer to kids and grandkids and family. We wanted a place where, a small town, we didn't want a big city, and a place where we could walk every place. I didn't want to live in suburbia. And we always liked Cooperstown, so it was actually my wife who found this small home here in town, little, I call it a cottage. It's a small little house that we bought, and at first it was going to be a summer place. And then when the job in Florida ended, we both decided that Cooperstown is the place we wanted to live. So we moved here, and I rented, as I say, opened a small office. I actually have an office, so I don't hang around the house all day long. That would not be very, very, very nice. Wouldn't be very pleasant for me or my wife to be in the house all day long working. So, but Cooperstown's been good for us. It's a good place. It's close to the valley. We still have a lot of things up in the valley we do in the Herkimer area. We're close to Oneonta. We have friends there. We do a lot of shopping and in business there as well. And some of my business in the private has been helping local businesses right here in Downey. I've helped a lot of local businesses either get into business or expand their business with the regulatory issues, administrative issues, business development issues. And that's been a lot of fun.
All right. We're approaching the end of our time limit here. I just have one more question. What are your thoughts on the community here in Cooperstown?
I think as a community, as a place to live, Cooperstown has a lot to offer. It's vibrant. It's active. We are an oasis, if you will, in the middle of a county that is primarily rural and unfortunately not economically strong. So we're very fortunate for that. I do get concerned sometimes living in a community that seems to want to overthink and overregulate everything, which happens sometimes. But on the other hand, when you look around other places, you say, you know, this is a pretty nice environment. It's clean. The infrastructure is being improved. The overall appearance is good. But in the people here, and I know a lot of people from the old days, and I've met some new people here. We have a blend of longtime Cooperstown people, longtime New York people, and a blend of newer faces. A lot of whom were brought here by the hospital, some by the program you're in, some by just the nature of retirement. And of course, it brings in the summer crowd, and some of that summer crowd really have been here longer than some of the natives have been. So it's a nice blend of people. We live on a beautiful lake. We have great amenities. We have tremendous restaurants. We have high-quality restaurants. We've got almost all the services you need. We've got tremendous health care, obviously, living where we are. There are some disadvantages of, you know, we're a little bit remote sometimes. You know, we're an hour and a half from an airport. We're an hour and a half from some of the major shopping areas. But there's enough here, but it's a quality, it's a clean, safe, friendly environment, which I think is very important.
All right. Well, thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This worked out very well.